What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Canucks insider Thomas Trance, also covering the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotic, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Another Canucks playoff game day. And actually, Drancer, it's going to be one way or another our final show of round one. Come Monday, we'll either be talking about round two matchup with the Oilers, or we will be doing a post-mortem on the series. But this is it for us for round one as game six goes tonight. What's going on, man?
Yeah, not much. It's been an interesting morning in Nashville. Lots to get into. And yeah, I'm excited. I mean, this is a coin flip game. It's a coin flip game tonight to potentially, if the coin flip goes against the Canucks, set up another coin flip game on Sunday. These are the margins at this time of year. You'd certainly love to see the Canucks have one of those enough of that type performances where they really put this series to bed. That if you think this team's a contender, that's what you should expect tonight.
All right, let's get right into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
Your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, May 3rd. The headline is Game 6 between the Canucks and the Nashville Predators goes this afternoon in Nashville, 4 p.m. start time here in the Pacific time zone. And, of course, as you framed there, the big question, can the Canucks have one of those professional contender-esque performances, rebound from a disappointing result in Game 5, and finish off the Nashville Predators in Game 6, avoid the ultimate coin flip of a Game 7 at home on Sunday?
Honestly, I'd be looking for more than that. I'm serious. I'd be looking for more than that. I think it would be very helpful, especially going into a really tough second round series in the event that the Canucks win tonight against an Edmonton Oilers team that like absolutely ran roughshod over the Los Angeles Kings, including converting on about half their power play chances, which, hey, look, we always downplay the impact of the power play in the playoffs, but the Kings were legitimately the best penalty-killing unit in the league, and the Oilers made them look WHL level. I mean, it was ridiculous what the Oilers were able to do. You know, four of the five games in this series so far have been one-goal games. The Canucks have come, I'm obviously excluding empty netters, by the way.
Yeah.
And the Canucks have come out on the right side of three of the four, right? Like, honestly, a professional performance, for me, that's like a baseline minimum expectation, but I think you want to go into that second round feeling even better about yourself than grinding out a win in Nashville after they forced a game five and made you spend 72 hours here and take an 8.5 hour flight. I think you want to see a statement win. I think you want to see this Canucks team like come out and leave no doubt tonight.
Yeah, I mean, job one is take care of business, right? And we discussed it yesterday. You know, you don't want to set yourself up for a game seven and all the emotion that brings. And then even if you win, super quick turnaround to go play Edmonton. You know, I would just guess, looking at the schedule, that if you do have to play game seven on Sunday, you're probably hosting Edmonton on Tuesday. So, like, really no time to decompress, prepare for a very, very tough Oilers time, if that's the case. Now, there still might not be a long layoff. We'll see. It'll depend on how all of the scheduling stuff plays out. But the earlier you can get this done, it would have been ideal in game five, the better. I see what you're saying, right? Like, yes, it would be great to go play. You know, I think I've made this point a couple times this week, but I'm not sure either team has played like three consecutive periods they'd be really happy with in this series. Tonight would be a great time to start for the Canucks, right? And if they do that, they have a chance to turn in the kind of performance you're talking about, leave no doubt, play their best game of the series, and go into a matchup with Edmonton feeling like, okay, that was tough, but we found our footing now, and now we're ready to go play more Canucks-style hockey, which, again, we're not getting ahead of ourselves here. We'll get more into the game tonight, but if they are going to continue this run past this series, they got to play Canucks-style hockey with a lot more frequency than they have so far against Nashville.
They have to play way better. If they're at the level that they've been in this series against the Oilers, it's going to be a short series. Period.
Yeah.
Like, that's just facts. And you know, I guarantee you that they kind of know it. Like, you hear talk about where their game's at. You hear individual Canucks players talk about where their game's at. You know, credit to them. I think their defense has been really, really at a really high level. But you're going to need to generate so much more to keep up with McDavid and company in the next round.
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt about that. And a chance for them to start doing it tonight in Nashville. Again, you know, you have no idea how like momentum in games is such a nebulous concept, right? Momentum between games can be a really nebulous concept, let alone momentum between totally different series. But having said that, it's always better to feel like you're at the top of your game, right? No one wants to back into the playoffs. No one wants to just scrape by in a playoff round where they're the higher seeded team with home ice advantage. So who knows how it would carry over to a potential round two series, but it's always better to leave no doubt, as you said, and enough of this game, take care of business, and then set your sights on the Oilers, certainly at least what the Canucks should be aspiring to today. Let's deal with the goaltending right here rather than in the lineup notes, because I certainly think that is one of the headlines coming out of the morning in Nashville. So I know Rick Tocchet didn't explicitly confirm whether Artur Shelov would in fact get the start tonight in Game 6, but he was the first player off the ice at the optional game day skate. And it certainly seems like all signs are pointing towards Artur Shelov starting again, which is a little bit of a surprise after how yesterday unfolded and some of the rumblings yesterday. But it looks like it will be Shelov's in the crease for Game 6 tonight.
Yeah, I mean, so it was an optional morning skate, and they opened the room pretty quick, but I stayed behind to watch in full because, for me, the goaltending is the story, not... You know, and no offense to whichever Canucks players were made available, but the news of the day quotas, I didn't need that as much as I needed to have a sense of who was in fact starting, especially given that Tocchet's not disclosing that information these days. So I stuck behind and watched. Now, Seelovs was on earlier, which is your first tell. Mm. And granted, Seelovs is going through a different game day routine than what an Ian Clark goaltender typically does. There's sort of like a compromise happening here, because Seelovs' starting routine down in the American League differs from how the Canucks do it up here. Mm-hmm. So there are some slight differences with what Seelovs' routine looks like from what a Demko or DeSmith's game day starting routine looks like. But being on the ice early and getting worked out under the close observation of the Canucks director of goaltending, while the scratches Juulsen, Amon, and Friedman sort of peppered Shelov's with a bunch of shots and got him some reps and got him the usual game day work, despite the fact that only one Canucks regular actually stepped foot on the ice, and that was JT Miller for the optional, heavily optional skate. An optional skate so optional that Tocchet told us he actively discouraged guys from taking it in the first place. At the other end of the rink, it was DeSmith really being sort of put through some much milder paces with... I believe it was Daniel Sedin, but I can recognize the Twins from a distance, but 100 feet, that's a little too much distance, especially when the guy's shooting with his back to me. So I couldn't quite confirm it, but I'm pretty confident it was Daniel and Yogi Shevkovsky, the Canucks skills coach. That's another really strong indication that Shelov's reps were more pertinent, more... preparatory for tonight's game. And then finally, Shelov's had the talk with Clark, the come to Jesus talk, as us in the Vancouver media tend to refer to it, which is a staple routine for a Canucks starter, and then he was off the ice first. That's a very, very clear indication, even though Tocchet declined to confirm it, despite my best efforts. I hope our listeners will enjoy that when we actually play Tocchet audio later in the show.
I did enjoy it, actually, the way you phrased the question. We will play that probably in the next segment. But
it's good fun now, though, right?
Yeah, no, Tocchet's into it for sure. Tocchet's in on the bit. There's no doubt about that. Well, especially it's so different for him because he's normally so upfront and direct about things. And it's like you can tell he's like having fun with the cloak and dagger part of the playoffs now that they're here. That's how I read it anyways. What do you think about the decision to start Archer Seelavs? We were talking and kind of thinking that it was pointing towards DeSmith, you know, if he was fully healthy, which it sounded like he is. Now, I know Rick Tocchet in his commentary to the media yesterday did leave the door a little bit open, saying, you know, it'll depend on how he looks in drills and, you know, is he tentative going post to post, all those sorts of things. So maybe that played a role, but still very interesting to see that they're going back to the young Archer Seelavs for this game six.
Yeah, generally I like it. I don't like to see a team flop goaltenders in series unless you're really pressed up against it. Like you really need a spark to give your team a spark, or you know the performance truly warrants it. Just because I think it's hard to switch and go back. I think the psychology of this can be delicate. Even though especially goaltenders are like, you know, trained, bred, and comfortable with the idea of having a short memory, it's still a lot to like shift your confidence on a regular basis. So what I like about it is, you know, this isn't must win territory, right? This mm-hmm. is a game you really want to take care of business in, but it's not must win. There is tomorrow, regardless of the outcome of tonight's game. Seelavs has played well in his starts, but so is DeSmith. Once DeSmith sort of lost the crease due to injury, I like the idea of riding with Seelavs until he loses the job. You know, like there has to be a meaningful reason why you go back to DeSmith, in my view, because if you go back to DeSmith tonight and he doesn't play well, or he's not as mobile post to post, or what have you, maybe feeling some of the ill effects of his lower body injury, I think it's hard to go back to Seelavs having sort of abandoned. Not abandoned, but having sort of gone away from him in the crease. So I like just sort of not making a change unless you have to, especially given that, yes, Seelavs has a higher ceiling, lower floor, in my view. So there's some risk in this. There's also some upside that he could steal you a game,
yep,
which the Canucks may need based on how the flow of the two previous games played in Nashville in the series have gone. I like this decision overall. Not because I think there's a huge gap between DeSmith and Seelavs and it's like the right hockey decision, but because there isn't, right? Because there isn't a huge difference in my view, and it's better to just make as few changes as possible, especially given what's already happened in the Canucks crease this series.
It's in keeping with Rick Tocchet's kind of overall theme of we don't need to be too worried here. Not that he doesn't think they need to, you know, take it very seriously, right, and execute on all of those things, but his stance has basically been, it's not as if Nashville has like exposed something flawed in us, right? That we just need to execute better. We don't need to keep going back to the drawing board and trying all these new things. I think that extends to the lineup and how he's rolling guys out there. And I think you're right. It extends to the decisions he's making in the crease as well. As I said yesterday, look, they've got every chance to win no matter who's in net, right? So it really is more of a, it comes down to more like the messaging you're sending to the team and maybe just who you have a little bit more, like that touch, that 1% or extra 2% more confidence in. And if there is still some lingering doubt about Casey DeSmith's effectiveness coming back from a minor injury, then sure, I have no problem whatsoever going with Archer Seelavs. Other headline I wanted to hit today, no surprise here, but Rick Tocchet officially a Jack Adams Award nominee. So is Andrew Brunette for the Preds, by the way. Rick Bowness, the third nominee. And again, we've known this has been coming for a long time. He's the favorite to win the award, let alone be one of the three finalists. But, you know, we did it for Quinn Hughes when he was a Norris finalist earlier this week. A chance to just take a moment. We've spent a lot of time talking about the job Rick Tocchet has done this year for good reason. Just a stellar, stellar season behind the bench for the Canucks head coach.
Yes. I loved Brunette's commentary. Did you see that?
That he was fired shortly after the last time?
Yeah, well, it's my second time nominated. Hopefully I keep the job for longer this time.
I forget who, it was a national writer on Twitter.
I love that.
A national writer on Twitter today was listing like the last 2 years of nominees, and it's like Lindy Ruff, Daryl Sutter, Gerard Gallant. It's like Andrew Brunette, who was then fired. It's like a lot of guys who are no longer with their current teams and are maybe not coaching right now. So it's always such a fascinating award, right? Because you got the hot goalie guys, you know, you got the team that everyone expected to be garbage, but then just sneaks into the playoffs. But is it actually more smoke and mirrors? But I will, like, Rick Tocchet could not be a more legitimate, deserving candidate this year.
No, it's been a phenomenal run for the Canucks head coach, overseeing one of the most impressive year-over-year defensive turnarounds, in memory, like in recent memory, arguably in the cap era. So this has been remarkable stuff. He's going to win it. I don't think there's a lot of doubt there, and he's going to deserve it richly, frankly. That said, I'm sure it doesn't really matter if this team doesn't win one of the next two games, right? Like, I guarantee you, to him, to the way that he's discussed in this market, to how we'll look back on this season, you know, the Jack Adams is nice, and again, mm-hmm. well-deserved for his work in the regular season, but you need one win in the next two, and that's going to color everything. It's just so much bigger than the award or the honor of being nominated.
Well, and that logic extends to so many things, right? And this was the point I was making when we were kind of arguing, do they need to win a series to capitalize, like, for this season to be a success? And you're right, like the Jack Adams, the Norris, like even think about, you know, Brock Besser tying the game in game four against Nashville. For those memories and for those to be as like fondly remembered in the future as they could be and should be, they kind of need to win this series. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, it's always, yeah, that was an amazing Jack Adams year for Rick Tocchet. Ah, too bad they blew that 3-1 series lead, especially now that they're up three. They were up 3-1 in the series, right? Like, oh, hey, that, yeah, Brock Besser tied the game. That was amazing. Ah, but then they just couldn't get it done. It's always going to come with that caveat if they can't get over the hump in this series and find a way to close out Nashville. I think you're right about the Jack Adams, too, because, look, as phenomenal as a job as he's done in the regular season, and I don't really take issue of anything he's done in this series specifically, but inherently, when you win your division and have home ice and you lose in the first round, there's always going to be questions coming out about, could the coach have done anything differently? And, you know, again, it will remember the Jack Adams, but going into the summer, that will be the conversation surrounding the Canucks coaching staff.
Yeah, I actually wonder, like, the Jack Adams is not the first award that they announced the nominations for. And now they come out and it's like, you know, Brunette could be eliminated today, mm-hmm. right? Or Tocchet could lose a game that forces a really nerve-wracking game seven. And Rick Bonus has already been eliminated, uh-huh. you know? I feel like they got to get this one out quicker. This one should go out like day of game one.
I mean, I think Rick Bonus in particular.
Because things change so fast for coaches. Yeah. And, you know, it like on the same day that the Jack Adams finalists are announced, two of the three could be eliminated in the first round. Like, that's tough, you know? So I actually think they need to expedite how quickly the finalists for the Jack Adams get announced. As to your point about the sort of shadow that could be cast in the event that the Canucks can't take care of business. You know, it's amazing how you win this series and that 12 seconds in game one, right? And that phenomenal comeback in game four, mm-hmm. take on this like air of inevitability, right? They become like moments that tell you about like the soul of a champion, right? Especially if you can extend this run even deeper mm-hmm. Than just a one series round. One round win. But the coloring of it in the event that, you know, you end up in a game seven and maybe it doesn't go your way, all of a sudden becomes like, and the Canucks were lucky to even win three in that series, right? So it's amazing how much what comes next will shape. And this is true across the playoffs. You think about Pettersson had a 90-point season.
Yep.
Ain't nobody talking about
no.
that right now,
no.
right? So David Pastrnak. Right, one of the best forwards in hockey, doing it with wildly little support all season long. And what's the conversation around him today? Right,
yep.
It's amazing how much the playoffs influence like collective memory and collective understanding of what a team, a player, a coach accomplished in any given year.
Yeah, they need to announce the coaching the Jack Adams nominees sooner and not go the GM of the Year award route where they wait to see who the final four teams are and then just choose three of those GMs.
Yeah.
They're like, we'll make sure we can't be embarrassed on this one and just wait to see who's actually playing in the conference finals. Quickly on the broadsheet, Rick Dhaliwal on Halford and Brough this morning here on Sportsnet 650, talking about Nikita Zadorov and his future. And it was interesting to hear the way Brough laid out the question to Rick. It was, can you lay out a scenario realistically where the Canucks keep Zadorov? And Dhaliwal answered pretty frankly, no, I can't, because he's going to be that in demand, asking for that much term, asking for that much money. And then also interesting to hear Dhaliwal lay it out with the phrase, if Zadorov was a right shot defenseman, he would have been re-signed weeks ago. Of course, with Quinn Hughes and Carson Soucy already signed on the left side for next year, so many questions on the right side. You can understand why the Canucks are much more inclined to prioritize right shot defensemen, at least, you know, if they're going to be giving big term and big money to guys going into the summer.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any reason why Zadorov shouldn't be aiming for the Ryan Graves contract. Right, and that's 6 years, $27 million total value, $4.5 million AAV with a very player-friendly structure.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that's the sort of baseline commitment you're looking for, and that doesn't even take into account cap growth and inflationary pressure on salary. So, I mean, Zadorov's going to do well for himself. The Canucks have a lot of priorities. Right, there's a lot of players that they're going to have to make some really tough decisions. They basically are going to have to rebuild their blue line. And you know, I'm curious to know if, from the organization's perspective, like, does the fact that Filip Hronek, and it's not just this playoff series, it's like the last 40 games, right? Does the fact that his production slowed, that his contributions looked far less first pair than they did in the first half of the year, like, does that in any way change their plan or influence their thinking of how to flesh out this blue line group for next season? Certainly this team's not going to be as dynamic or as big or as capable of, you know, playing quote unquote Canucks hockey without, you know, a tree trunk like Zadorov on the back end.
And to your question about has Hronek's last 40 games changed how they view it? I mean, I think it better, right? Like, I think it would be hard not to at least change it from where they probably were in, you know, December, January earlier in the season. But that's very much an off-season discussion for later on. Lineup notes, another interesting one here that came out of Canucks, not at the optional game day state, but shortly after. Thatcher Demko, who of course has been traveling with the team despite being injured in game one of this series, really unclear timeline still on when exactly he might be ready, was reported by Dan Murphy that he skated yesterday, and then he was also out skating after the rest of the team skated today. So interesting development. Again, we don't know exactly what this means. You know, Rick Tocchet didn't have that much of an update, but interesting to see Thatcher Demko getting some time on the ice down in Nashville.
Absolutely, and seemed to be in good spirits. You know, after briefly preventing the media from taking photos, he gave a friendly wave and a laugh from the far side of the rink. And yeah, I mean, great to see. It sounds like the work is very much not at the level of like physical stress that would make him close or anything like close. The way that this club typically manages return to play for goaltenders, you know, you're talking multiple full practices. You're talking about a week out from the time that a player even rejoins the group. Could some of that be expedited because of the intensity of the playoffs? Maybe, but man, I'd honestly hope not, given the two non-contact injuries in 6 weeks in the same knee, fact of the matter, right? So, you know, we're still a ways away from that, but it's awesome to see, especially just because, you know, you can't not feel sick for a competitor like Demko on the verge of a career, potential career defining opportunity, having that taken away from them. You know, like that, it just sucks so much. And you feel sick for a guy. And to see him working his way back, even if it's very early stages, that's awesome for him. I'm sure a lift for the team as well. Corollary to this, by the way, Casey DeSmith's first ever playoff start, right? He makes those like 50 stops and then gets hurt.
Yep.
And can't sort of see it across the finish line as Louis Domingue comes in relief of him. And then his second career playoff start, he has the game of his life in Nashville in game three and ends up being hurt late in that game. And now he's lost the net. Like,
that would have been
sick for him, too.
That would have been
That's
his third, because he started game two, too, right? But
Sorry.
But still, I take your point, right? Like, getting an opportunity potentially and then gets hurt. And now he's not back in the net. after, and he played a really, really good game in game three, right? That's really tough. And you know, the Demko thing, we haven't, I don't think we've talked about this that much, because when the injury happened, it wasn't clear exactly how it happened, but it was that play with under a minute left, right? Where he's, where Nashville's taking the puck behind the net and he's going to his post. And it's like, that's another even more brutal layer to it, right? Like, you were so close to that game being over, to getting out of it without incurring the injury. It's like 45 seconds left, and instead that happens on a play where you're not even making a save. Just an absolutely brutal blow for Thatcher Demko and the Canucks in that instance. Okay, gambling update for us quickly here at the end of the whiteboard. I mean, you don't have to go quickly. I don't care. We don't have a guest in the next segment. Do whatever you want.
Sorry, the gambling odds?
Yes.
Sorry, bud. I zoned out for 2 seconds. The Canucks are road underdogs today, plus 105. So that's about a 48% probability. As we've discussed, right, this is a coin flip series, and tonight is a coin flip game weighted slightly in Nashville's favor, according to the markets. I'd add this, the majority of the handle, the majority of the money is on the Nashville money line. So the market believes the Predators are forcing game seven here, both in terms of the price that Vegas has set and the actual behavior of bettors. There is no steam on either the over or the under. It's set at 5.5 minus 110 each way. The majority of the handle there is on the under. The market believes that the under will play tonight. And then interestingly, because every game in this series has been so close, Canucks are minus 275 plus 1.5 on the puck line. And the vast majority of the handle is on the Canucks plus 1.5. So market expects it to be a close game, a low scoring game, and a Predators victory to force game seven. But you know, by the skin of their teeth, an extremely tight game is what the market, what bettors are anticipating here this evening. And I think that matches everything we've seen transpire over the past week and a half.
I'm shocked that everyone is expecting a tight, low-scoring defensive effort that ends in a one-goal win for Nashville. Are absolutely stunning, considering how this series has gone. I do kind of feel, though, now that we've all settled into, okay, that's what this series is going to be, that we could be due for an absolutely wacky one that ends up going way over and somebody wins by 3 or 4 goals. So we'll see what goes down tonight in Nashville. That's the whiteboard for today. Keep your text coming in. 650. 650 is the dumb Bar Lumber text line. We will hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet on a game day next. We'll take some of your texts as well. It is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.